Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Obviously, our goal was to add depth to the pitching staff, and the goal was to add depth to the bench. I think Willie Castro, in some ways, does that with one person. I think from a pitching standpoint, adding three guys was obviously something that we focused on. I'd say from a starting pitching standpoint, it was a really tight market, I guess the way I would say it. Very few rental starters, effectively no starters that had 1 year of control after this. And then controllable starters, none of those guys changed hands.
As you heard me ask, that was from Jed Hoyer yesterday after the trade deadline. That was his press conference, media availability. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. We just got the news a few minutes ago that Moises Ballesteros has been sent back down. That from Taylor McGregor. And as a texter aptly put, so you're untouchable in a trade, but you're not good enough to play for your team. Dramatic pause, because I agree. We're trying to examine what the Cubs did at the trade deadline. And part of the reason I'm so, I think, fired up about this and the fact that they didn't do as much is because we're paying attention to other GMs as well and how they are acting. Jed told you things were going to have to get creative at the deadline. And I think you saw that. You saw what, 20 deals yesterday that were done total. There were definitely trades that were made. But I want to listen to a guy who takes a different approach than what you hear a lot of the general managers in Major League Baseball do. And it's somebody who has had established success now at three different teams when you consider Dave Dombrowski's resume. You know that guy's going to go for it at the deadline. I don't know how you feel, Marshall, about him, but when I hear the reputation of mortgaging the present or mortgaging the future to win now, I always think to myself, the World Series isn't cheap, and you're going to have to make those deals. And you at least know that dude is going to try.
My whole thing is this. The Phillies will spend money, period.
They'll spend money, and they'll spend prospect capital.
And guess what? If they run out of prospects, they'll just spend more money. That's why that works for them, because they are operating from a completely different place than where the Cubs operate from. Look at why their guy, their MVP, Bryce Harper, is on that team as opposed to on the Cubs.
And also, they know that Bryce Harper isn't getting any younger. And so they're trying to take advantage of what they see their window to be. They acquire Johan Duran from the Twins for catcher Eduardo Tate and right-handed pitcher Mick Abels. So we know that those are two prospects that the Phillies have. And Abel was ranked number two in Philly system for several years, but now he's number six. The point is, they did part with a big price to give the Twins something that they wanted. But listen to him talk about the need and the reason why. This was on NBC Sports Philadelphia.
Well, I mean, we liked quite a few closers or quite a few relievers. There weren't very many available at the start of the night. Some other organizations decided to not make some moves, so we just thought he was the best guy out there, really, is what it came that was available to be acquired. A lot of clubs have been talking about if we were going to acquire their closer, that they were asking for Andrew Painter. We decided that we weren't going to trade Andrew in this trade. And so we felt this was a deal that we got a dominant closer for a tough price, two good players, but something that we think where we are makes sense. We would not have paid this price for a rental. So that's what really is a difference for us. So not only this year, but two more seasons after this. So if we were talking a pure rental, we would not have traded these players for that. I really didn't think this one was possible, a couple days ago. I'm not really sure what the difference was in there. I do think that having Abel close to the big leagues made a difference, because I do know that they had a lot of interest in him. We've heard from a lot of clubs that were trying to get him after we got him. And so they really picked up over the last few days. And really, even this afternoon, late morning, I should say, because we were at the hotel, that's when we really kind of, okay, give me your best offer. We had gone over so many different other possibilities and names. So it really picked up over the last, really more so today. This is where really, Derek had mentioned to me, I don't know what time it is, it was 5 o'clock. It was 5 o'clock, he was going into an ownership meeting, 5 o'clock Minnesota time, to discuss whatever options they had, he told me. But really, a couple hours before that is when we really start going back and forth.
That is a guy who identified the need, identified the market, knew he was probably going to have to pay more than he wanted, and did it anyway. And you see what mattered to him when you know exactly what the priority list was and what the order of importance was, don't you? It's like the algebra formula is clear as crystal. It was biggest need, what the price was, how many years of control, what the deal was going to be prospect-wise. Period. Paragraph.
The problem here, Layla, is that, to quote one of my favorite lines, favorite quotes of all time from The Wire from HBO, you want it to be one way. It's the other way. And what I mean by that is you want the Cubs to operate like the Phillies that have a $289 million payroll, the Phillies that have the fourth highest payroll in baseball. And let me tell you this, Dodgers, Mets, Yankees, Phillies, Blue Jays, Astros, Texas Rangers, Padres. You heard all those teams' names called yesterday when it came to trade deadlines, right?
You did.
The only team that you did not hear their name called, as far as trades that have bigger payrolls than the Chicago Cubs this year, the Atlanta Braves. Why? Because they're hurt. Their entire starting rotation from the start of the season is right now on the injured list. They are out of it. They are hurt. Everybody else was more aggressive. And while the Phillies have six players making over $20 million a year, the Cubs only have two, and it's barely over $20 million a year.
And all that's cool, except he's still telling you why he traded. Like, that was a barter. That was not an outright monetary transaction. He's telling you why he made that deal. And that's it. You're only overpaying for somebody when there's no market for that individual. I'm thinking about the Patrick Williams contract when I say that. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score, and I'm not trying to throw him under the bus. I'm giving the example. And you're not seeing the Bulls do that now with Josh Giddey, maybe for the same reason. I say all that, though, to show you that's what a clear path looked like for that general manager. And when I think about what Jed Hoyer had to say, and I appreciate his availability, I am happy that he joined Danny Parkins right after the trade deadline for the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon. But he didn't have the same approach. He did say, just like Dombrowski, that certain people they thought were available were not going to be. So let's listen to what he had to say about how he viewed the prospects that are coming down the line and what he needed to do at this deadline.
No, that's the wrestling match over and over is, you know, is that, right? At what expense are you doing this to your future? And listen, like, we had a lot of conversations about controllable starters. We had a lot of conversations about, you know, good relievers. I think ultimately it wasn't an unwillingness to part with prospects. It was sort of an unwillingness to go to the length that we would have to go and the depth and the volume we would have to go. So I think there's no question, you know, you have to be willing to part with prospects to get really good players. I think the question is just how many and at what cost. But you framed it really well, and that's the constant back and forth you have all the time. Like, you know, and also it's about what players are actually available. And I think that's always an important thing. At the deadline, it's a sort of a select group of players based on who's out of the race and who's willing to transact. Some of the guys that people thought were available, like, they weren't actually even available. There was, you know, the teams that said, we're just not going to talk about that. So, it isn't free agency. You know, it's a kind of thing where sometimes there's just simply players that are unattainable, either because they're on contenders or because the teams, you know, want to win next year and they don't want to focus on that, or they don't want to do that to their fan base. So, in some ways, it was an interesting deadline in the sense that some of the teams that I really expected to sell bought, and some of the teams that I expected to sell just stood pat. And when that happens, there's not much you can do to make those players available. So I think in that regard, it was certainly an interesting deadline because the behavior wasn't quite as rational as usual.
That was Jed Hoyer talking to Danny Parkins during the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score, and this segment is brought to you by Almost Free Teeth. Save on dental implants today. When I hear Jed Hoyer talk and I hear Dave Dombrowski talk, those are two very different thought processes, concepts, approaches, etc. One of them has gotten a lot closer to a World Series than the other recently.
I think one of them is fully enabled by his ownership group to do whatever it takes to bring me my trophy. That's the words of John Middleton, the owner of the Phillies. And the spending is the indicator. The reason I brought up all those payroll numbers is because the Cubs are 10th in payroll. And everybody, including the Cubs and up, are all in the playoff mix. They're all fighting for a playoff spot, and they all think they can make a charge at the World Series this year, led by what most people have as the World Series favorite. Surprise, surprise, it's the Dodgers who spend the most money, and that's with deferred money to the biggest and best player in all of Major League Baseball, Shohei Ohtani. And so the Cubs have to find a way to navigate around this, and I'm just worried that they're taking this one year, this one magical year, where, to be frank, going back to the beginning of 2025, people are outperforming expectations. Layla, if I told you the Cubs would be a game out of the best record in baseball, and that in doing so, you'd have guys like Carson Kelly having the kind of year that he's having, even Michael Bush, Pete Crow Armstrong, obviously. There's so many guys who are doing more than they've ever done in their Major League Baseball careers. But my issue with what happened at the trade deadline is Jed Hoyer didn't take advantage of it, of the moment, and saying, all right, I'm going to give you whatever you need to go up. And they may still have enough. I'm not saying they're incapable of making a run at the World Series. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you're putting undue pressure now on the offense to keep up what has been an historic season for several members of that offensive squad.
Yeah, to me, there's a couple of things at play here. Number one, you did decide that certain positions where you thought you had your guy weren't good enough when you decided to DFA Ryan Pressly, for example, when you decided to DFA Flexen, when you decided to DFA Vidal Brujan. You decided to upgrade at your bench with Willy Castro, which I think will help this team.
Yeah.
But you didn't do it at the other positions where you're seeing other teams go from good to great. And good to good in the National League, I don't think gets you there. In the American League, where there were a lot more transactions, as you mentioned, yes, it does. The delta is different. But that's not what you are in right now. You can't dictate your market the way you want it. And that's my whole point from the last month on, is that you weren't good enough, even with that record currently as it stands, knowing what everybody else is doing and what they were about to do. You weren't allowed to dictate the market the way you saw fit. You didn't think you had enough prospect capital, evidently, because you wanted to hold on to people who I don't know if necessarily they were worth holding on to. And then you decided the future, which likely is without Kyle Tucker, is going to be more successful for those individuals in the present. And that's where I take offense.
No, I'm completely with you there, except for the one fact that when you talk about going from good to great, there was really only one position for them to do that on offense, and that was third base with Eugenio Suarez. So that's really the only issue I have with the offense. Otherwise, I think they have good enough offense now with Willy Castro put in at that utility spot.
815 says, Jed did the right thing. We want a dynasty, not a single World Series. You wanted a dynasty in 2016, too. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. The game changed around you. That's my point. You know you've got right now. And you decided that when you gave up who you gave up to get Kyle Tucker to begin with. Can't be partially pregnant on these things. I would know. We're going to talk Bears next. A lot happened at Halas Hall this past week. We didn't get to discuss it because of the radiothon. Some really compelling audio, I think, that you need to hear from Ben Johnson, and also I think a dude proved that once you step on the field, whatever happened before off of it, we should probably forget, or at least try to. That's next on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. The Score! This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
It is my honor to award the 2027 All-Star Game to the Chicago Cubs and Wrigley Field. The game will be played here July 13, 2027. The amazing transformation that has taken place of Wrigley Field and indeed Wrigleyville will provide a great setting for one of our most important events.
That was Rob Manfred making the big announcement. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. And come hang out in Wrigleyville, Rob Manfred. We can fix you up. It's not just cool souffle pancakes like Japan, but I think we've got a pretty good thing going here. And for more, I feel like it's been a while since we talked because the Cubs charity for a Cure Radiothon raised over $750,000 since we last spoke. Crane Kenny, you're back with us here on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Thanks again for coming on.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. And thanks to your station, Mitch, and obviously Danny. $750,000 blew past last year's raise, and now the baton's in our hands, and we take it tomorrow, and I think we're going to go well north of $2 million after doing $1 million last year, so that's really special.
That's a reminder, incredible.
We're at $762,792 as of right now. Just that you can keep on texting through Cure 25. Text that to 41444, or you can call 773-388-8270 to speak with Cubs Fan Services. Keep the money coming in.
And also, Crane, just I think that's a really good point just to start is when you consider how charity dollars are not as plentiful as they have been in years past. And for the radio station here and then Cubs fans and listeners to be able to do all of this in a year where we haven't seen that as much, what do you think of just that ability that everybody was able to chip in this way?
Yeah, no, I think some of it's an honor to Rhino. You know, this week was, you know, so much about him. There's some really weird circumstances. We had chosen the date for the All-Star Game announcement 6 months ago. We chose the date for the Cubs for a Cure in December. We chose the date for the Rhino flip-up glasses giveaway today, probably in November. And then Rhino passes this week, and all of these events are happening the same week. You know, we're obviously mourning his loss, but also celebrating his life. And all of it comes together on a Friday 1:20 game at Wrigley. You know, there's some grace to that. And I think we're all taking some comfort in, you know, the game he loved so much, in the ballpark he cared about so much, and having the commissioner here to celebrate his life. It was cathartic today. It was a good day.
It has been a cathartic week, Crane, and I just know that today this announcement that the All-Star Game is coming back to Wrigley Field for the first time since 1990 is a bit of a shot in the arm for everyone involved. And I know so much went into this. How pleased are you, and how exciting is it to have the All-Star Game scheduled to come back now in 2027?
It's huge for us. You know, the renovation of Wrigley was, you know, many years in the making. We first went to Rob to ask for the game in 2017. Was our visit to his office in New York to say, hey, the project should probably finish sometime around 19 or 20. What a great way to cap the project by, you know, you awarding the All-Star Game. Then obviously COVID happened and a bunch of other things, and we just couldn't quite get there. We had a real serious security issue here at Wrigley. You know, I'm a broken record on wanting to close the streets. Every year the league scores its 30 ballparks for security and terrorism protection, and we're usually the last because we have active streets during games. You guys have been up here. You know, like on a game day, there's a U-Haul trailer rolling down Addison Street, and if it were full of fertilizer or other hazardous things and somebody took a U-turn, the main gate, like, not great. And huge shout out to the governor, the mayor, city council. I was asking to close the streets. And as you know, the alderman has been against that, saying, you know, that would really hurt the commercial businesses up and down the streets. And so they came up with the idea of installing the bollards on the public way and providing protection in a different way. So big credit to them. And that helped Rob get to the point where he gave us the game. And now we're going to celebrate in 2027.
Nice ringtone there in the background. I had to laugh at that. It was a nice little exclamation point to the end of that statement. But I do think that's something that you told us. It's not like pivoting a kayak. It's more like turning a barge when it comes to security and bureaucracy and discussion, and whose responsibility is this street, and whose responsibility is you know, securing this part of this town. I think there's a lot of that we probably as sports fans aren't necessarily aware of. How much of that did have to take place in order to get to this ultimate point?
Yeah, that's a great point, Layla. So Addison is actually a state road. Clark is a city road, as is Waveland and Sheffield. So you had, you know, the state involved with needing to support, and we need to relocate some utilities to do all this work. We're going to widen the sidewalk a little bit. So you needed the state on board. You needed the city on board. You needed funding. I mean, real issue here is this is a $25 million project. Now, we've seen bollards installed elsewhere around the city, so they know how to do it. So it wasn't really a know-how. It was just we needed financing. We needed cooperation from the city and state. And obviously, the mayor and the governor have a lot of big issues on their plates. This is probably not on the first page of issues that they have to deal with, but they did. And then Rob did his thing. And like, so now think about it. Like, I'm not from Chicago originally, but I claim it now as my town. And there is no better place in the world than Chicago in the summer. And to bring our game, we've been strategizing. We're going to use Navy Pier for the Fan Fest. We're going to use Millennium Park for the draft. We'll use North Avenue Beach. I mean, we're going to use all of the assets that showcase our city so well, and inviting the world in, because this is really a world production, to see Chicago in the middle of the summer from the very best vantage points. I just can't wait to do that. That's going to be fun.
I know it's been a process, and to culminate to round third base, if you will, since we're talking baseball, to use baseball terms, and to finally slide into home has got to be a feeling. What's the energy like there in the building for getting across the finish line for this?
Yeah, I think it's two things. We've kind of had the deal done with the league. One of the big issues, I'll tell you, that we had to wrestle with is our season ticket holders. So what happens, this as I mentioned already, so it's the world comes to Chicago in 2027, and the league, in order to satisfy its needs and the needs of the other 29 clubs, needs access to our best seating inventory. We are fortunate to have so many season ticket holders. We had a long negotiation with the league about how do we protect the rights of our season ticket holders to see this game, many of whom have waited 37 years to see it. So there's a lot of like negotiations, but we finished all of that about 3 weeks ago, right before the Atlanta game. I went down and we kind of shook hands on all the final issues down in Atlanta. So then it was about, okay, now the work that's in front of us, staging, you know, it's not just the game. It's a kind of a week of activity. I think the league will install themselves in Chicago beginning in February to get ready for a July game. So it's going to be, you know, based on Derek Schiller's report, he's the president of the Braves, like it'll be kind of a year of activity to get ready for this week of games. So we know a lot of work ahead of us, but for now it's celebrating and, you know, we love our ballpark, you know, we feel strongly about it, and, allowing the commissioner, allowing us to share it with the world. That's a cool thing.
We're talking to Crane Kenny here on 670 The Score and Rahimi and Harris. This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Crane, I don't think it's going to surprise you that we have a lot of fans texting in. They were asking because they want to make plans. You know, everybody's excited about this. They want to make plans for 2027. They also know, though, that there's been a lot of discussion about the CBA being up at the end of 2026. What is the plan when it comes to trying to figure that out? Because people are asking us, what's the alternative plan if there is a work stoppage? That's a long time if it lasts until July. But I know that that's something where if they thought about it, you guys thought about it too.
Yeah. So the league typically grants games 2 years in advance. So we know already that Philadelphia's got the next game, and then we would have 27. They'll grant the 28 game next year. So in 2026, they'll do because again, the planning takes so long. Someone will get 28, 29 will be open. You know, last thing in the world we need is a work stoppage. If it were to happen in 27 and we were to lose the game, you know, 29 would be open. And we've talked to Rob about, you know, would 29 then be our game? And he didn't quite say yes, but I think we saw this with Atlanta. Remember, they had the game originally scheduled. See, what year was it? 22. And then they had a number of issues and had to cancel that game. I think it then went to Seattle. And so then they got it. They got the 25 game. So let's not talk about, I mean, today we're focused on 27. And I certainly don't want to let my head go too far down a path of a work stoppage, because that would be devastating for our game and our players and our fans. But we're playing on 27. If that doesn't happen for any reason, you know, we'd have a backup.
Got it.
I'm guessing we're having as hard a time of getting tickets now for the rest of this season as any season in recent memory, just because of how good the Cubs have been. They start the day right there, a game out of the best record in all of baseball. I'm curious as to what the demand has been like lately. You talked about the Red Sox series being the highest, you know, demand maybe of all time in terms of a series. Where are we now with that 5-game series we got coming up against the Brewers and some of the other series that we are looking at right now, Crane?
Yeah, we're again, our fan base has been so supportive. I think the team, it's a really captivating team, right? Winning team for sure, but just the way we play, I think it's such a great brand of baseball. We're fortunate. We're well sold through kind of early September. We typically have a kind of a moment when the kids go back to school in late August or September that sales then depend on the success of the team. And with a successful team, September is selling quite well. That 5-game series with Milwaukee, I'm trying to remember when it was. We had a late season, I think it was a 4-gamer with them. And I believe it was in Milwaukee that was really pivotal. The world will be focused, certainly Cub world will be focused on Wrigley Field for those 4 days and 5 games. That'll be, and for your business, I think, you know, you'll have plenty to talk about for 4 days.
Well, yeah, it kicks off with Matt Spiegel singing the national anthem on the first day of the series. You know, that unfortunately got postponed because of the rain. You have that to look forward to, too.
Well, Matt actually can carry that off. That'll be one of our better renditions, I have a feeling.
I'm sure he'll love to hear that. We are looking forward to it, and even Danny Parkins during the Radiothon, we had some fun with it as well, because those were some of the tickets we were giving away, were that Brewers series. Yeah, as a business person, I'm sure that is something that you consider. Yeah, I hear the reaction there, but that was part of what bidders were asking for and donating for.
Yeah, I got to tell you, so our players, I just saw counts before I came in to do the All-Star Game announcement. Our players are so supportive. You know, I heard the PCA piece, Brad Keller, I mean, all of them giving either gloves, meet and greets, autographs, tickets. It's just such a good clubhouse, led by Counts, obviously, at the top, and his relationship he had with Danny and Danny's brother. I was really proud of the organization as a whole. The Ricketts family, very supportive as always. And then we did a big match here at Wrigley, led by all the 4 Ricketts family members, and then Jed and I. And, you know, kind of top to bottom, it was fully supportive. I think we'll have something like 96% participation by our staff members, each contributing something.
Wow.
And then huge gifts from our corporate partners. Our new partner, AbbVie, came in with $250,000. Cologuard came in with $100,000. American Airlines with $100,000. Like, you know, reaching into their own pockets to support something that's important to us and obviously anyone who's battling this disease. So a lot of good feelings around here right now.
Crane Kenny, the Cubs business president of business operations, joining us here on Raheemy and Harris as we talk about the All-Star Game officially awarded by Rob Manfred and Company to the city of Chicago and Wrigley Field in 2027. You talk about partnerships. I had to ask you because I was shocked that Danny Parkins, who, granted, 24 hours, no sleep, I don't know what kind of mental state he was in, but he had never heard of the Yeti Yard. And I want to ask you, if that particular partnership has exceeded expectations in terms of popularity, because I said, as soon as it was announced, I was like, this is going to be the most popular thing that's happened in Wrigley Field in recent memory.
All right, Marshall, we got to get you on our staff here, because you predicted it more than we did. It was the first asset sold out this year. When you look at the clubs, suites and other, we call them premium spaces.
Right.
Have you guys been out there?
No.
Have we had you out there yet?
But
no.
You can have us out anytime you want.
And we want to go, but you know, we also understand that like paying customers deserve to have
their
experiences.
Space,
yeah. Like we know we get to go to games a lot of the time for free. We try to be respectful of it.
Yeah, but you guys are celebrities. We can come by. They'd love to have a visit. So let's talk to Mitch. It's, you know, and again, I'm 62 years old, so like I can't really relate to the current bleacher population. But what it does is it gives old timers like me who used to spend time in the bleachers, who just can't do it these days, a way to have the bleacher experience, the energy, the sort of open GA feel, the noise, the proximity to the field, the relationship you have with the outfielders, you get all of it. But with the creature comforts that, like, I can't sit on a bench for 3 hours. Like, I just can't do it. And we didn't, you know, we were experimenting with it. It was a long, weird story about how the space was returned to us. And we said, yeah, this could be cool. And then I think by April 8th, every date was gone. And right now we're actually looking at how we would enlarge it for next year.
And you should. You should definitely enlarge it. I'm here for that.
Even Jameson Taillon was talking about going if he was able. You know, that's the power of this thing.
Yeah. Sometimes we're smart. Sometimes we're lucky. This one was definitely the latter.
It does sound like a great environment. And I think the bleachers are fun because kind of like sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. We do know who sits in the bleachers. And to be in Chicago and have that that relationship with a lot of people where you know somebody who that's their seat, I think that's not very common. I can't imagine what they're going to be like for All-Star 2027. I can't wait to hear the pitches they have to try to remain in the bleachers for those games, but something tells me they'll be into it as well.
Well, think about this. Like I was down in Atlanta, and you know, I was kind of keeping track of how many balls like would have flown out of Wrigley during batting practice and then the home run derby itself. So like for the Ball Hawks on Waveland and Sheffield, I mean, is it going to be like 200 baseballs flying out of the ballpark? And like, what's that scene going to look like? I mean, so we have, you know, because the small footprint of the ballpark and the fact that we're right on top of the city streets, you know, there'll be some unique things that happen in Wrigley at the All-Star game that probably have never happened, you know, anywhere else.
It feels like it's going to be Sosa McGuire levels of chasing down balls for people out there in the streets, and the streets will be packed. I don't know. I don't know what the new security issues details are on, like, who can be where outside, but if they're allowed, there's going to be people everywhere out there.
All of Wrigleyville. I mean, we had a little taste of this when the World Series was here. And I mean, for you guys probably had some feel for it. Like you couldn't look down a street and not see, you know, 8,000 people. And so we're gonna do that in the midsummer, which should be fun.
Well, and also Crane, while we have you on, it was such an emotional day yesterday, and I know that was hard to talk to us about, not just being in the media and being in an interview for the first time for a lot of people since Rhino's passing, but also the reception that you guys got, what we heard about what's going on Saturday was so well received. I think for everybody who may not have heard it or they want to know what more they can do, I know the Cubs are wearing number 23 tomorrow for Rhino. It continues the weekend that we have of charity with the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon. Is there anything else you want people to know about Saturday's game specifically? Because I do think there's a lot of fans who are either going or there's something that they want to do, not just by donating to help, but maybe in-game participation. What would you say?
Well, so yeah, it's going to be it's going to be his day. We've got the field stenciled down for today. We're going to run a tribute video today and a moment of silence today. So the way the 2 days will break up, today will be a little more solemn in the way we do it. Sean Dunstan is here, you know, his partner. I saw Sean for the All-Star game, and we had an honest talk about what Rhino meant to him. So we're going to have him deliver second base today. And, you know, so today will be probably a little more solemn. Tomorrow is going to be more of a celebration of Rhino. So still the stencil and the batting practice shirts, but then all the guys wearing, you know, I think that's such a great message. I literally talked to Ryan a week ago when I saw him last about, I said, hey, we're going to wear 23 in your honor. And players had been doing that. Lester threw out a first pitch with 23 on. Woody did it as well. Everybody was kind of wearing 23. And I said, hey, we're thinking about which jersey. And he goes, definitely the blue and no names on them. So he, you know, even in his final week, he was directing the show. Like, he didn't like the names on the back of the jersey. He thought, you know, you play for the name on the front. So we're honoring his wishes. Navy blue. No names, everybody having 23. Only Ryan's flag will fly on the fall poles.
Oh.
We'll take down Billy and Ernie and everyone else. And, you know, we're going to send a message. And I think 40,000 people cheering you know, cheering for him. And then we've got some really great moments. Seventh inning stretch going to be sung by a cancer survivor. Actually, I think you had him on the air today. A WGN
Mike Lowe.
Talent. Yeah.
Love Mike. That's so wonderful.
Yeah, top to bottom. Tribute to Rhino and to all of those who've been battling cancer. Like, I think we're going to more than double what we raised last year, which is just, you know, such a credit to Danny. Like, this idea was born literally sitting in the bleacher or in the grandstand at Wrigley. He had just finished his radiothon for food insecurity, and we were mourning the loss of Lynn Bramer, your colleague from the from XRT, and I said, hey, what if we married your radiothon with my cancer tribute to Lynn, but raised money instead? And literally eating a hot dog in the stands, he's like, let's do it. And then never knew he was going to leave the score, but then to come back and just keep it going. What a huge respect for Danny. He's just such a good dude. And we're doing good in the community, so all worked out.
Thank you so much, Crane. I know this has been such a roller coaster when you consider All-Star, when you consider this weekend. Just let us know what we need to do. You know, Navy Blue in 23 on Saturday, and let us know where the party's at in 2027. You got to give us the updates.
Thanks so much, Crane.
You got it. First thing though, I need to get you out to the yard. So I'm literally going to text Mitch when I hang up, and we'll find a date that works for you.
Oh my gosh, that is too kind. And in the meantime, you know, thank you for this. Thank you for being on with us about the announcements. And please, you know, as the state grows closer, people want to know what's happening, and they want to know where they can celebrate with a festival that is baseball in 2027. Congratulations again on the All-Star game, and congratulations for raising $750,000. For cancer research.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
You don't get a statue by yourself. Every one of my teammates and coaches stands right there with me. After all, none of this happens if a disgruntled Larry Boa doesn't want out of Philadelphia. Thanks, Larry, for always being disgruntled. And thanks for making me chase all those pop-ups. And that was all because of the sun and the wind, like you guys talked about, how tough it is here at Wrigley. But, Bo, thanks for showing me the ropes.
There's Ryan Sandberg at the unveiling of his statue outside of Wrigley Field. It is Rahimi and Harris, Mark Grodian for the entire 1 o'clock hour, Rami Makhlouf in for Layla Rahimi today. And joining us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, download the Circa Sports app today, the aforementioned by Ryan Sandberg there in that speech, Larry Boa. Larry, did he ever thank you in person for being disgruntled and forcing your way out of Philadelphia, which ultimately brought Ryan Sandberg to Chicago?
Yeah, he always reminded me of that. He was very happy there in Chicago. And this is a tough day, man, for baseball world, for his family. My prayers go out to Margaret and all the children, the grandchildren. Like I said, I saw Rhino. He came to visit the Phillies in spring training towards the end of February, I believe it was, and he looked great. Talked to him a few times. In fact, one day I called him. He was golfing, you know, and I thought, man, this thing might be headed in the right direction. Excuse me. And, you know, it's like I said, it's a tough day. And not only was he a Hall of Fame player, he was a Hall of Fame person.
Larry, we know this is a tough day for so many, whether it's the fans here in Chicago, baseball in general, his peers, everyone's spoken so highly of him for us who have covered him. And you summed it up with the Hall of Fame player, not just that, but also a Hall of Fame person. What do you want people to remember about Ryan Sandberg?
First of all, how humble he was. Usually people with that superstar label, you know, a lot of them have their own personality. They go their own way. This guy was available to everybody, whether he went 4-for-4 or 0-for-4. Children, he'd sign autographs, talk to fans. Unless you got a chance to really know Rhino, people thought he was like shy and everything. Once you got to know him and he let you in his circle, he was a tremendous teammate. He was great in the clubhouse. there isn't anything he couldn't do on the baseball field. Whatever, you need a stolen base, he'd do that. You need a home run, he'd do that. You need to make a play. Always prepared. I remember we got traded, and I called him and I said, hey, when are you going to spring training? And he said, well, due date for us to be there is the 15th of February. I said, no, we're going February 1st. We're going to work on double plays. He goes, you got it. And from that day on, his work ethic was second to none. In fact, when we went on the road or even at Wrigley, when the tarp was on, he felt like he wasn't ready to play. So we had to play pepper, play catch. We found a dry spot. He really felt like if he didn't do his pregame stuff, he cheated the game. That's how dedicated he was to this sport. And I think the biggest thing about him is that, like I said, when you do the things that he did on the baseball field, you know, sometimes you can get a little cocky and dig yourself. Reiner was never like that. He was a team player. All he cared about was winning baseball games. He could care less about all the other stuff. And he prepared like every game was a World Series. And he's going to be really, really, really missed, not just in Chicago. People know Ryan Sandberg all over the United States. This guy was a tremendous athlete, tremendous person. And like I said, this is one of my most difficult days. I knew things weren't going well. And in my opinion, this is just my opinion, he is so humble. I really believe, because the last time I made checks on him, they said that it could be any day. And I think Reiner waited till the Hall of Fame was over. I really do. He didn't want to take any of all the accolades of the guys going in a couple days ago. And that's what kind of person he was. Huh. That's just my feeling, because I feel I was really, really close to this guy. And like I said, I miss him already. I miss him. I do know one thing. The man upstairs has an unbelievable player up there. I know that.
Larry, no doubt about it. I would just like to, I am sorry for your loss, man. And look, I was 12 during the 84 Cubs, so you can imagine how much you and Rhino and Leon Durham and Ron Say and Bob Dernier and Sarge Matthews and Keith Moreland and Jody Davis, how much you guys all meant to me watching those games. So it is, I don't know how to put it, but it's an honor to be able to hear from you on this day and to hear you talking about Ryan Sandberg this way.
Well, we had a ball. We had a lot of fun. We played hard. The only thing that I have nothing bad to say about Rhino, except one thing. Every time we got into a cab, Rhino would go in the back seat. He never picked up a cab fare, and I told him, I said, you know what, once you get that big, big contract, you're going to have to get up here in the front seat and whip out that wall, and he would crack up. He had that contagious laugh he walked through the clubhouse and say something, and then he'd see me and Bull or Keith or Sarge or Bobby talking. He'd come over and he'd instigate something. He'd walk away and look over his shoulder and start cracking up. I mean, this guy, he was a tremendous individual. I can't say enough about what kind of special person he was. I know he was a great player, but he was just a special person.
And he eventually did get that big contract. I remember when he signed that deal, and it was $30 million, and people were like, is any player or pro athlete worth this much money? And look where we are now, Larry. But did he ever pick up a cab fare after that? And did he change at all as a person after achieving that type of wealth?
No, he never changed as far as the money was concerned. But he did pick up some cabs, I will say that. But he played the game like he was making the minimum. You never heard him brag about the gold gloves, the silver sluggers, the MVP. He just wasn't that kind of guy. He always had words of encouragement, whether a guy like me was 0 for 10 or Say was 0 for 12, whatever. Hey, hang in there, keep going. And I remember his very first game at Wrigley. I mean, he started off terrible. He had a long 0 for, and everyone kept saying, hang in there, hang. He says, you hang in there. Right then, I knew right then the mental toughness was there, because when you first come up as a rookie and you start off the way he did and you didn't cave in, I knew. I said, this guy's going to be something special. Now, I'll be honest with you. I think he was going to be a Hall of Famer when he first came up. No, but I saw him evolve into He was like a line drive hitter, like myself.
Yeah.
But he learned how to hit home runs, and I'll tell you what, the sky was the limit for him. He could. There isn't nothing he couldn't do on the baseball field.
Larry Boa joining us here on Raheemy and Harris with Rami Makhlouf and Mark Grody also in here in studio. And Larry, I want to ask you, because we were just speculating, because you kind of mentioned it, that, you know, what we saw as fans isn't what you guys saw once Ryan Sandberg got to know you and had like a softer, funnier side. What do you think it was that propelled him from that quieter version of himself to this guy that we've got countless stories from fans and their interactions with him after his playing days?
I think the biggest thing with Rhino when he first came up, this is just me, I mean, just being close to him, I think he wanted to prove to everybody that, hey, I can play up here. But it wasn't a bravado type thing. It was, I'm going to show people that I can be one of the best to ever put the uniform on. And what amazed me about him is when you first get called up and you play one position, that's one thing. When he first got called up, we had him in center field. We had him at second base. We had him at third base. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at this rookie and I'm going, this guy is unbelievable. I think he finally realized that, hey, I was pretty good, but you'd never hear it from his mouth, believe me. He thought he was just one of the guys, and he was, except when you look at his stats, and then he took it to another level. But I just think that the fact that he had so much confidence as he grew as a player on the field, that he understood that he had to set examples for young guys coming up. I mean, he was around guys that played before. All those guys that you mentioned have been in Philly. We won a World Series, so we come over there and we pass our knowledge on to Rhino, and he did the same thing when he was, you know, when he once established himself as one of the best to ever put the uniform on. He did the same thing in that Cub clubhouse. And like I said, I'm glad the statue was put up. I'm glad he was able to see that. I'm glad he was in the Hall of Fame and able to live that. I just wish we had him here a few more years, because he's going to be missed not only by Chicago fans, but everybody.
Amen to that. And I'm glad that you were also at the statue unveiling. It made it great. The packed house, the whole thing. It was a great vibe out there. And I'm glad too that you mentioned, people forget, man, Sandberg goes down as one of the greatest second basemen of all time, but he was a pretty good third baseman too in his rookie year. Like, I don't remember having many problems over there either.
You could put him anywhere.
Yeah,
I guarantee. I mean, if he was alive, he'd say no. Well, you put him behind the plate, he'd probably do a good job catching. This guy was just a super athlete. Any kind of ball you put in his hand, you put a bowling ball, put a tennis ball, put a golf ball, basketball, whatever sport it was, he excelled. He was an unbelievable golfer. and he was an unbelievable quarterback in high school. I guess he got recruited by a ton of colleges.
Oh, yeah. He was offered to play quarterback, I think, at Washington State, pretty sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you know, he's just, like I said, he's left so many good things on the table by leaving us early, but he set the example of how to play the game the right way. And if you're a Chicago Cub baseball player and you're just coming into the organization, I advise every one of you to find as much video as you can, listen to interviews from him, read books that he wrote, what kind of individual he was, because he was something very, very special.
Last thing from me, Larry, is I do have I've got a trivia question for you. I want to see if you can. I ask this trivia question probably about once a year when we talk about the Sandberg game. The Sandberg game. We all know the Sandberg game. Who had the game-winning hit in the Sandberg game? Do you remember? Larry Boa.
No, I thought it might have been Sandberg.
I know, everybody. that's the answer I get 96% of the time. The answer is Dave Owen. Dave Owen ended up, out of all of that, two home runs in the ninth and tenth innings, was it?
Did I get that right? Wow. Yeah. Game-tying home runs.
Yeah, and then little Davey Owens with the game-winning hit.
That's a great trivia question.
You can use that.
You're right about that. You're right about that. You know, usually people say, hey, you remember that game between the Cubs and the Cardinals? And I say, oh, yeah, but they don't do that anymore. You remember that game, the Sandberg game? That's what it was called.
Yes.
And, you know, from that day on, well, he was established before that, I think. But that really put a stamp on how great this guy was. national TV, doing what he did against one of the all-time closers of baseball in Bruce Sutter. And yet, if you'd have gone in the clubhouse after the game, you would have thought, yeah, I got a home run. No big deal. We won. That was a bigger deal.
That's Larry Boa joining us to remember Rhino here on 670 The Score, as we have all day long. Larry, thank you for your time. Condolences on losing your close friend and Ryan Sandberg. And we can't thank you enough for coming on here and being part of celebrating his life today here on The Score and on the Raheem and Harris.
Thanks so much, Larry.
I appreciate it. And I love this guy to death. He's a great player, but more important, he was a great person.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Amen. Thanks, Larry.
That has been a sentiment that has been shared by so many people today, and it is so accurate.
He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com.